children.
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Cinco de Mayo is actually, I know, I always, it's forever, like, stuck in infamy for me because it was my first day at the job that we met at, for me.
Was it the first day?
Uh-huh.
Oh, shit. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember, because one of our coworkers, who was white, was wearing, like, a sombrero and a fake mustache.
You know, in retrospect, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
But, like...
In the moment.
Even I have... worn a sombrero and a fake mustache.
Okay, but you have a mustache.
I have pictures of this, though. Remember, I didn't always have this mustache.
Mm.
But it may have sparked the interest. Like, hey, hold on a second. If I just shave it down a little bit.
Maybe I can make this work. Anyway.
And then got laid a whole lot more once I grew it.
Congratulations.
There's a big difference. What was I thinking for a long time?
Facial hair is like men contour.
It really helps.
No, like, it truly, like, I've seen, like, men, like before shaving and then after, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God.
No, I looked like a 14-year-old
boy. I know,
like
Anthony.
Like a 14-year-old
Anthony,
boy.
When we met, I was, when you were just like, well, you were like, I think, oh my God, you were like 30 when we met.
Mm. Was it 30?
Yeah.
30 or 29?
29, like, well, no, because, like, you just, yeah. So you were, like, 29.
I had the facial hair when I was, got it during 29.
Okay, yeah, so you, but you still had, like, the baby face.
Yes,
like,
yeah,
you,
definitely.
You know, mm-hmm. And then I remember I met, like, and you were like, no, I'm 30. Yeah. And I was just like, nah. Cause, yeah, because at this point you had to have been 30. Cause
yeah, you're right, you're right.
20, yeah, because I started there in 2017.
Dang. What, that means I had just turned 30, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I had just turned 30. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the
stash. And then you told me you were 30, and I was just like, bullshit. Because mm-hmm. at that point, I was 22.
See, and I grew
this... Or I was about to turn 20. I was 20.
Was that...
I was 21, about to turn 22. I was so young.
Really?
I was 21.
Oh, because you were doing it in June.
My birthday's in June, yeah.
Huh.
I was 21 years old.
God, we were such babies.
I know.
We were such babies. And I literally grew that facial hair probably like 6 months before I met you.
Yeah.
So you just, you saw like the new version of me was like, I'm trying something different, blah, blah, blah. Like that, yeah.
Yeah.
What podcast you saw? I'll listen to podcasts now. I'm a new man.
I'm going to spend my lunch break on Reddit.
Yep. And work hours on Reddit also.
I know.
And work hours
I
on
know.
Reddit.
Yeah. We sat next to each other.
Yep. Like, okay, this computer's not facing the CEO office, so I am good.
And even then, like...
Hey, you know how much they paid us? Not.
Exactly.
I'm going to spend some time on Reddit.
Highway robbery.
Mmm. Mmm. There's no transition there. Highway robbery. Speaking of exploitation.
Yeah. Actually, yes. That's a good one. Speaking of exploitation, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining us, as always, Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Oh, I'm feeling so good right now. Let's do this.
Anthony's like... high on life right now.
Yeah, yeah. Not any kind of substance. I've literally just got back from having a nice sushi dinner for myself.
He like goes on like these like self-care days, like right before we record, where he's like, I get coffee, I get sushi, I go to Target.
I buy things I need.
You live your best suburban housewife life, like right before.
You know what though? Because prior to living in the city, I lived in the suburbs with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived that life often, you know?
Yeah,
despite our shitty wages, you know? I wasn't good at money management. I still did it.
Well, yeah, because you didn't have to pay rent.
No, exactly. Well, I had to pay a little rent, but like baby rent, you know? Now it's like, no, yeah.
You paid like, yeah.
I paid like a couple hundred here and there. All right, everybody, get more groceries for the week.
Yeah, exactly. You paid living at home rent.
Speaking of living at home rent, what's our theme for the month?
Oh, yeah. Welcome to May. Also Cinco de Mayo, I guess.
Yeah, sorry it couldn't be more thematically important on a day
Cinco
like
de Mayo is also like, it's an Americanized holiday anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
But we are talking, first off, about high school horror for the month of May. We're very excited.
That's right, because we didn't tease this last episode until the very end.
Until like the last possible second.
But this whole month we're going to be doing high school-based horror movies. So lots of dead teenagers, mostly getting stabbed, but other methods are incorporated that we'll be exploring throughout the month of May. And at the end, tackling a major franchise that has been long requested.
Long requested, yet to be tackled. It'll be an interesting month for sure.
And it's going to start another sequel cycle. Thing. This time for May, though, so that'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting.
I also think... I don't think we have any guests this month.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because, like, we have, like, yeah.
Oh, they're not coming until, like, July, huh?
Till June.
Till June, that's right. Oh, boy. All right, well, we just get these voices, so I hope it's good enough.
Yeah, I hope you guys aren't, like, you know, used to hearing other people.
Oh, I bet they can't. They're like, no, bring back the classics. You know, the classic month. That's right. That's what we're doing also.
it's the classic.
It's the classic and high school. But, of course, to kick off.
Yes.
This wonderful, very interesting month is a 1982 slasher by the name of The Slumber Party Massacre. By the way, very cool font. I like
oh,
it.
Oh, thank
I like
you.
The, I like that one a lot. And IMDb tells us that this bad boy is a female high school student slumber party turns into a bloodbath as a newly escaped psychotic serial killer wielding a power drill prowls her neighborhood.
What a... I mean, yes, that is the movie.
Yes, it is the entire movie.
Yeah, the entire movie.
No, like... this is simple as fuck. It's slasher...
101.
101, 100%, yeah. It was directed by... Amy Holden Jones, and produced by Amy Holden Jones, and written by Rita Mae Brown. So, all female creatives here driving the story.
Yes.
And, of course, it was actually produced by Roger Corman, so...
We're going to talk about it.
Yes. So, all female for a very, very exploitative director. Or producer at this point. And, of course, this stars Michelle Michaels as Trish...
Devereaux.
Robin Style as Valerie Bates. Cool name. Michael Vieja as Russ Thorne. That's an interesting... Okay. Deborah DeLiso as Kim Clark. Honoré as Jackie Cassidy. And Jennifer Myers as Courtney Bates. Did they hire a bunch of Mexicans that looked white?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Those are names like of people. Yeah.
I have no clue.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so it was released, of course, on September 10th, 1982, in good old Los Angeles, and November 12th, in 1982, in New York City. Budgeted at, which you'll be visiting soon.
Yeah.
Relatively soon.
Next
right?
month, yeah.
Fucking hey. It's already coming up.
Yeah.
Oh my god. What's happening this year?
We have to record
year?
Some episodes because I'm going to be gone for a good chunk of time.
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out. But this was budgeted at a very cheap Roger Corman-esque $220,000. But it made significantly more than that, although still not a lot in the grand scheme, but $3.6 million.
I mean, it made more than its budget, which
made
was
way more.
Which is
yes.
More than I was anticipating.
Definitely, definitely. Now, this is a feminist movie?
It started as a feminist movie.
With the best intentions.
As they all do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, the writer of this movie was Rita Mae Brown. Those of you who are listening because of me are just like, oh, that name sounds familiar. Rita Mae Brown is an author and feminist activist. She wrote the original screenplay, which was initially titled Sleepless Nights or alternatively Don't Open the Door.
Good name. I like that.
I like that's them. Yeah. She wrote it as a parody of the slasher genre. Producers did repurpose Brown's script to make a, quote, serious slasher film against her wishes, which...
Very serious. Huh? Such a serious movie.
This is such a serious movie. Like I said, Rita Mae Brown, she's an American feminist writer, best known for her coming-of-age autobiographical novel, Ruby Fruit Jungle.
That's a good title, too.
Yeah.
Man, she's got this. So aren't more people to listen to her?
Well, she's a pretty prolific writer.
Okay.
Yeah. Brown was active in a number of civil rights campaigns, but tended to feud with other leaders over the marginalizing of lesbians within feminist groups. not to turn this into a women's studies lecture, mm-hmm. although this is my area of expertise. technically, this is the one thing I have a degree in.
Right? This is you're academically certified to be able to talk about this kind of
yes,
stuff.
Yes, exactly. Rita Mae Brown is a super prolific writer and feminist activist coming distinctly from second wave feminism. And for those of you who know what I'm talking about, you're just like, ah, mm-hmm. I see now. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's okay. This isn't a women's studies lecture.
So for let's say some of us don't know what is going on with the second wave.
Second wave feminism is like your bra burning.
I was thinking bra burning.
Yeah, yeah.
I was between bra burning and hairy armpits. Those are the two.
Yeah, same thing.
Yes, okay, good.
Yeah, same
good.
Same
okay.
wave. Yeah, first wave is like we should be able to vote.
Yeah, yeah, pretty simple wave. Okay.
Yeah. Second wave, yeah.
Second wave is just like, okay, but everything else is straddling us down, so fuck this shit.
Yeah, it's second wave feminism is also frequently associated with, like, trans-exclusionary radical feminism, mm-hmm. where basically it's, like, saying, like, trans women aren't women, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing.
Interesting.
But it's...
It's the Born in Waves era, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is the Born in Waves.
It's totally Born in Flames era. I knew it.
Yes. I would say the tail end, maybe the beginning of third wave.
Okay.
For Born in Flames, but yeah.
All right, good to know.
I need to look up when Born in Flames actually came out to
the
tell
70s.
You. Then yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would say tail end of second wave.
Interesting. Okay. See, I'm getting better at this.
You got this?
Yeah, I know.
You're feminism by osmosis.
I did take one women's film theory class.
Yeah, you told me about it. And that's the one where you had to watch Born in Flames.
That is. That's the one. And then a bunch of other shit, too.
Do you remember any of the other movies you watched?
God, there was one vampire fucking movie that was brutal. And I hated it also.
Vampires Lisbos?
No. It was, I gotta find my old syllabus or something like that. There was some interesting ones.
So, I specifically didn't want to turn this into a women's studies
lecture. It's
fine.
It's fine. We keep going.
So, director Amy Holden Jones is not very sympathetic to people who complain that she's a sellout to her gender.
Yeah.
As a woman who produced an exploitation flick with a lot of naked girls in it. Quote, that's what Roger Corman, the producer, wanted, and that's how it's done. You give the studio what they want. Nobody complains. That's Scorsese, Jonathan Demme, and Ron Howard made exploitation pictures, but when a woman tries, she gets called a hypocrite and a turncoat. That's BS, unquote.
I have actually seen her make this statement, and the conviction, and she's just like, ah, fuck you. Like, it's great.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's awesome.
She's, I, the 100%, it's such a great point. Like, yeah. You're allowed to do studio movies.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And despite all the changes she had to make to the film, Jones does manage to work some gender-specific criticism into her imagery, from a insert shot of a discarded Barbie to the way the killer's long, menacing drill often dangles between his legs in a very obvious innuendo.
And also the way that the drill gets cut in half at the very end. That's pretty on the nose. Yeah.
A little bit. That was just a quick blip into Theory Corner. Like I said, I could talk about this movie and it's like women's studies feminist agenda for a while, but yeah. I'm going to avoid it.
And we might, you know, a little bit, keep the episode going. Let's go. So, of course, Amy Holden Jones, a film editor, wanted to direct and asked Francis Dayol, a writer and story editor associated with Roger Corman, for advice. So for those who don't know, here's why this is a big deal. Roger Corman is often credited with mentoring filmmakers like Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola, two big motherfuckers, who got their start working for the B-movie Impresario?
Impresario.
They often speak about the creative freedom afforded by Corman's commercial formula, which is, I don't know if it's written out in here, but it is tits and blood.
Yeah.
That's the formula.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
yeah.
all the formula is. The man is still working now, and he's 95 fucking years old.
Yes.
Oh, Roger Corman, that's, wow. That's insane.
He's still working. Like, I think one of his, like, recent things was, I mean, it's from, like, 2018, so it's not, like, super recent, but he's still, like...
That's pretty active. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's only 3 years ago. Yeah, he's in his fucking 90s. So, Dowell gave Jones a number of scripts. Jones chose the script that would become The Slumber Party Massacre, then going by the title of Don't Open the Door, and decided to film the first three scenes. Bold. Fucking bold. So her husband, cinematographer Michael Chapman, acquired equipment and film and hired actors from the University of California, Los Angeles, and they shot the scenes at their house over a weekend for $1,000. She showed the results to Roger Corman himself, who then agreed, of course, to finance the film because she is talented.
Yes.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. It's a good-looking movie.
It despite all of its very funny flaws, it is a good looking.
It's slick. It's slick as fuck. Yeah, it's slick and cheap. It's a weird mix.
It's good. Yeah. Like it has that cult like oomph to it.
That's how your movies last. Again, the Carpenter formula. Put everything into the visuals and the sound and make it A+. Everything around that will work.
Yeah.
She knows what she's
doing. Make it work.
So shortly after Corman agreed to finance the film, Amy Holden Jones was offered an editing gig on E.T. Yes. That E.T. She turned prime Spielberg down to make this movie. Yeah, I remember reading about that also. I was a little heartbroken for her because I was like, damn, that was his big, big, big one. I mean, Jaws was big.
Well,
before that was pretty big, but E.T. was like, okay, now
Raiders of the Lost Ark was right before. It was like right before this.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes filmmakers only get a couple movies and they're like, oh, they did a bunch of other shit. But then he was like, no. It's as big as those movies were. I'm going to do another one just as big. Yeah. So, fuck you.
Uh-huh. So again, prime Spielberg just like turned his ass down.
Oh, man. So Jones, who had been in the business for a few years and knew what Corman expected, reportedly scaled back some of Brown's outrageous ideas and included more of what Roger Ebert would have called dead teenager movie elements. Yeah.
Yeah, she did.
That is highly incorporated in this movie. Filming began in the summer of 1981. The film was shot on location in good old sunny Los Angeles, mainly actually in Venice, which is a very dangerous place to be right now.
Oh.
So according to Amy Holden Jones, the movie was originally supposed to clock in at about 90 minutes, considering that the film only runs about 76 minutes. Quote, there was a different ending. We reshot to punch it up. It must have been lame because I can't remember it. I think it was the same, but without the pool. We ruined that pool with the reshoot, but it was fun. Amy recalled. One other particular scene that was omitted for pacing reasons, as Deborah De Lisa recalled, was a scene with the girls playing with a Ouija board spelling out the words death.
I'm so glad they cut that out.
Yeah.
Like, the movie's silly, but like that, I feel like that would have been so over the top. I would have been like, okay.
It's like, then I would have been thinking, is there supernatural shit? What's going on? Why? Don't confuse me now. Uh-huh. It's pretty simple as it is.
Mm-hmm. Don't confuse me now. That's true. So, after the film was completed, the studio held a test screening at a theater in on Hollywood Boulevard, and Amy Holden Jones was startled by the audience reaction. As she recalls, quote, they went ape. From the very beginning, they were screaming and laughing, and there were people behind me making drilling noises and talking back to the screen. Amy left the theater and approached producer Roger Corman, who was listening in the lobby. She said, my God, Roger, what did we do? He replied, quote, we had the best preview in New World history. Jones went on to direct only 3 more films. None of them were actually in the horror genre, though.
But that's got to be a cool feeling, though,
right? Oh, totally.
Like a group of people just losing their shit to your artwork.
Regardless of how, like, your thoughts on this movie, seeing it in a theater must have been fun as fuck. Oh, my
God. If Freda did a screening of this shit, people lose their fucking minds. It'd be great.
It would have been fun.
You hear that, Freda Cinema? You fucking do it.
I mean, I know you guys are back, so let's do it.
Their backpack?
Mm-hmm. Their backpack, baby.
Summer's coming. We're going.
We're going.
Yep. Oh, boy. That's exciting.
Yeah, their first, they showed Dazed and Confused on 420. Mm. That was like their first like in screening or in theater screening.
And if you're listening to this and having a 420 feeling after this, we do have a 420 episode shot just a couple
and
weeks
we
ago.
Are so blitzed. And for that, I do apologize, but
just get blitzed yourself. It'll be a fun, it's like you're hanging out with friends.
It's true. And mm-hmm. and that's the vibe we just go for in general.
100%. Let's do it.
So distributed by New World Pictures, the film premiered in Los Angeles on September 10th, 1982. And was given a limited release in New York City on November 12th, 1982. It grossed $3.6 million at the box office, again, on an estimated budget of $220,000.
With a limited release, too? Wow.
Yeah.
Dude.
They were like, we want this to do well.
With that audience reaction?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if they would have scaled this up, it would have been something insane.
Well, I mean, it did go on to inspire... Well, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
So, the Slumber Party Massacre received, let's say, mixed reviews from critics. Mm-hmm. Rotten Tomatoes reports that 41% out of 17 critics gave the film a positive review, with an average rating of 4.1 out of 10.
Damn.
Despite the critical reception, the film does have a large cult following among slasher fans.
I mean, this is like slasher AF. This is very slasher.
As a slasher fan,
yeah,
I do, like, I mean, we'll get into it, but, like, yeah.
It delivers the goods.
It delivers the fucking goods,
yes.
Man.
Yes.
Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote of the film, quote, "The Slumber Party Massacre is just the usual..."
Cavalcade.
Oh, thank you. I like we just keep going back and forth. I'm like, this is how you say
the
that
The usual
word.
Baklava. What? That doesn't make sense.
Okay, what is it?
Cavalcade.
Cavalcade mm-hmm. of corpses. All of them dispatched by a manic...
Maniac. You should know that word.
Maniac. Fuck off. By a maniac who wields a power drill. At the end of the movie, a woman who has... I just keep laughing at my inability to say words. Who has miraculously survived the carnage, breaks his drill in half. That's feminism for you. And symbolism, too. Time Out gave the film a middling review, noting, quote, "Despite the unlikely script editing for Rita Mae Brown, Jones' debut feature is little more than a Halloween clone reliant on buckets of blood and sudden surprise rather than suspense." That's not fair.
No, this is not like Halloween.
It's not. It's not. And also, like, Halloween set the stage. Mm-hmm. It built the blueprint.
I mean, you got Dean Cundey doing the cinematography in Halloween. Yeah. Like, it's hard... This is shot for a similar amount, actually. But still, like, you know, mm-hmm. not a fair comparison. Like,
yeah, like, just because really. It has that low-budget feel doesn't immediately mean it's a Halloween ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
David Hinckley of the New York Daily News awarded the film 1.5 stars out of 4, noting that the performances are, quote, uneven, and, quote, the special effects are not special, unquote.
That's a pretty straightforward, just, like, not special, move along. That's fucking
fucked
guy.
Up.
Wow.
On Letterboxd, The Slumber Party Massacre has a 3.1 out of 5 stars rating out of... I forgot to put a K here.
Oh, okay. I'll say, wow, not a full review to finish that one off, huh?
18.8 thousand reviews.
There you go.
Leave me alone. Karsten Rundquist says with 4 stars, quote, "People just don't say fork it over shortcake anymore."
Oh, that's a good one. They don't.
They don't.
They should.
They should, yeah. But they don't.
I should say that to the sushi guy next time.
Fork it over, shortcake.
You know, I'm shorter than they are. Damn
it. I can start saying it to you.
Yeah. I got nothing to offer. Hey, what's that tablet pen? Fork it over, shortcake. It looks pretty cool.
Next time you go to get claws, like, mm-hmm. fork it over, shortcake.
No, I'd shake it up and fucking hand it to you.
Open it and just like be like, oh, you want it?
I'm like, good. Now organize them in your fridge. It's your fridge.
Fuck off. Shortcake.
That's a good sentence, though.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of one-liners in this where I'm like, ah, the 80s. Mm-hmm. Ah, the early 80s.
Oh, yeah, at that.
Mm-hmm. Sally Jane Black with 4 stars. Quote, "There is literally no scene in cinema history better than when they eat the pizza off the corpse," unquote. And if you haven't seen this movie, I'm sure that sentence makes no sense, but it makes sense in the movie.
It's pretty funny, though.
It's very funny.
It's just, oh, it's just there. She's just like, well, you know.
He's dead. The pizza's not.
Yeah. Is the pizza still warm? Like,
I mean, to be fair, the pizza did look really good in that movie. Yeah. Like, it looked. Maybe I'll order pizza tonight.
I do. I keep thinking about ordering pizza.
Me
I don't
too.
Fucking do it though.
Yeah.
I don't
well,
why.
Here's okay. The problem is when you live alone, ordering pizza is like a whole endeavor. You know what I mean? Because then
that's
you
leftovers.
Yeah, but then I mean, but also like, do I really want to spend like $30 on pizza? Like, you know?
You got a cheap. I live next to Pizza Del Sol. That place costs like $7 for like a fat large.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's good.
It is good. I remember. I miss your screening parties, Anthony.
We're gonna do it again. All right, it's happening. A couple months. Everybody's gotta get vaxxed. Just waiting on everybody to get vaxxed. We're almost there. That and I gotta get through May because I have a lot of things I'm gonna make. But June!
I'm going to New York!
After June. See? That's why. Yeah. You're going to New York. It's another.
Well, okay. I mean, it's just in the middle for a weekend. Like,
okay. When you come back, though, we can have one. It'll be fun.
Fine.
Yeah. With pizza. With Pizza del Sol.
With pizza. Mm-hmm. And some awesome movie. No corpses. But awesome pizza.
Maybe corpses on screen, though.
Yeah.
See what we're watching. Yeah. All right.
This is why we need guests.
No. They'll rock it further. Especially if it's anybody that's been to one of those screenings.
It's true.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of shit talking going around yeah. that time. Yeah.
Remember the Shin Godzilla? Anyway, good times.
Almost there. Summer's almost here, Alex. Let's go.
I know. Anyway, Sean Gilman with 4 stars says, quote, "That drill seems to mean something. Like it's a drill. But it also might be something else. I can't quite explain. It's almost like it's a symbol. Meant to imply some other object or idea that for some reason we can't see on screen. I don't know. I could be imagining things. Maybe sometimes a drill is just a drill." Unquote.
Mm. Sometimes a drill is just a drill. It penetrates things from the odd angles. Yeah.
And it is dangled between legs that are like in a very straddling motion.
Oh, yeah. Definitely in a thrusting position. Yeah. Can't imagine what that symbolizes at all.
Anyway. I laughed my ass off when I read that one. Aaron, with 2.5 stars, saying, finally, quote, "Female written and directed horrors are absolutely beautiful, but frankly, this was not gay enough, in my opinion," unquote. Which, I have opinions on this.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, like, when they're all in the shower, and, like, they're, like, gazing at each other longingly, like, the two girls who survive, I'm like, is this going to become really gay? Like, I was very confused.
Interesting. I didn't really get the gay vibes looking at it, but I don't know. Maybe I wasn't looking for them. I was just, yeah.
No, I mean, I find gay vibes in everything because I'm me. But no, mm-hmm. like, in the very beginning, like, when I think it's, like, what is her name? Valerie or Veronica?
I forget their names, honestly.
Yeah, it's true. Valerie and Trish. The two main girls, the ones who mm-hmm. live, at the very, like, in the very beginning, they're in the shower, and, like, they're, like, looking at each other, and, like, Trish is staring at Valerie, and I'm like, yeah. This is gay? ? Anyway.
It's so great, is what it is.
Yeah, right?
This review brought by Tony the Tiger. Slumber Party Massacre is great! Yay!
Yeah, right? The reviews are hilarious. It was hard just picking a few, so go read them Definitely. If you want a good chuckle, because they're very funny.
Oh, this is Letterboxd gold. That's why there's so many more than like a lot of our studio movies we cover.
Definitely.
Because like this is worth 18.8K reviews.
Yes.
Yes.
After the Slumber Party Massacre from 1982, there have been 2 sequels to the film. Slumber Party Massacre 2 from 1987 and Slumber Party Massacre 3 from 1990. Jason Paul Collum directed a documentary, Sleepless Nights, revisiting the Slumber Party Massacres in 2010. Other films in the Massacre film series.
Right, okay. Which,
we're talking like a universe, like MCU, step back.
Pre-MCU, though.
It's true.
They knew what was up.
Yeah. Includes a second trilogy called Sorority House Massacre from 1986, Sorority House Massacre 2, Not Night. Nighty Nightmare.
Was it not Naughty Nightmare?
It's Nighty Nightmare, I think.
Nighty Night. Okay. Which, wow.
From 1990.
You wanted to call it Naughty Nightmare.
I wanted to call it Naughty Nightmare. I was like,
missed opportunity again.
It's true. and Sorority House Massacre 3, Hard to Die from 1990.
Also, these two
came out the same year. Wow. Interesting.
Wow.
So
that's an interesting release strategy. That's a Matrix Reloaded release strategy. That's great. They're horrors ahead of its time.
It's true. Oh, man.
Oh, so we got a plot to tell you.
Yeah, we do.
Boy, is it a plot. So, in Venice, Los Angeles, of course, Trish Devereaux.
Yes.
Yeah, I did it. An 18-year-old high school senior decides to throw a slumber party while her parents are away.
Okay, let's unpack this, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Within the first 30 seconds, tits.
Yeah.
Yeah, first 30 seconds, like, of this movie, like, immediately, like, she's just like, good mm-hmm. morning,
All these slow motion shots and shit.
And then I'm just like, yes, that's how every woman wakes up in the morning. Awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah.
No.
I mean.
And then, once she's, like, dressed or whatever, she like goes through her room and is throwing away all her childhood toys. Which is, she's just like, I'm not a child anymore. And I just
I got boobies now.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly the thought. I was just like, okay, like, yay, like, okay. You're 18, like, suddenly.
I'm going to go make out with a boy, a man. I'm going to make out with a man.
A man. I know what I want from life because I'm 18 years old.
You can't tell me what the fuck I know, mama.
Yeah. I was just like, what is going on? But it was a weird scene, right?
Yeah. Because,
like, she walks down, like, she walks through her, like, dresser or whatever and is just throwing away these toys. And then she gets, like, this dog plushie and she's just like, I can't throw this away. Like, it's stupid.
I mean, it's a smart thing to start off a story with, like, a personal crisis. That genuinely is good screenwriting right there. I feel like they tore it apart enough that it turned into this. They're like, was probably a profound scene. We're going to just turn into this, though.
Yeah, they just, like, flicked it in there, though. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if they had turned it into, like she was debating what college to go to, mm-hmm. if she was, like, going through anything else. It was just, like, it was mentioned and then never mentioned again. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, not a girl anymore.
The only time it circled back was when she was just like, oh, I threw out some of my toys earlier. And like, because like the serial killer, like in the most like teenager prank fashion, put a Barbie, like hammered a Barbie like next to the door. And I was just like, okay.
Middle school fucking mentality right there.
Well, this is also where we get like the breaking newscast about this serial killer who's escaped. And it's, that's nice, because, like, it does a nice way of integrating it into the story without, like, being like, hello, big serial killer, huge if true, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's enough to let you know, hey, this, the goods are coming.
Yeah.
The goods are coming. Here's a couple of the goods we're trying to introduce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their neighbor, by the way, Dr. Dave, or Dr., jeez, what is wrong with me today?
You're just flipping letters. Dr. Maven.
I've been doing that all day, actually. Oh my gosh. I posted something for my boss, and the link was like, vote best OC or something, and I flipped the words, and I posted it to his story, and I immediately had to take it down.
Yeah, I've done that before, yeah.
I was like, oh no!
Or my sales manager like messaged me like 10 minutes later, and he's like, by the way, not correct, and I'm like, fuck me, coming off and coming back on. Sorry.
No, thankfully I noticed right away because I checked the link because I just typed it in myself. But I was just like, why am I switching words today? Anyway, their neighbor, Mr. David Content, which is a weird last name. Anyway, he's given the job of checking in on the girls. She awakes, this is out of order, but she awakes and gets dressed shortly before going to school.
Yeah, all right,
which is,
cool.
She just tumbles out of bed and is just like, oh, I'm going to wear this sundress and no bra because I'm in high school in 1982.
Because the 70s were not that long ago and we're still feeling it, baby. Still making strides. So, meanwhile, Russ Thorne, an escaped mass murderer, kills a telephone repair woman and steals her van.
This was so sad. Like, I was like, oh, she was actually a set designer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That person, yeah, she was a set designer for the movie.
Damn. Mm-hmm. She's just like, you know what?
And a great ass.
We don't want... Yeah, there's a lot of specimens in this movie, to be honest with you. Like, I gotta say, they picked a really good set of ladies. Set of ladies from a catalog, you know? A binder, would you say?
Binders.
Yeah, full of them. Just
fuck off, it's me.
2012 joke for you.
I know. I was like, great. Awesome. Good
9 years ago.
Oh, no.
It's going to be 10 next year.
We are as old as time.
I don't even want to think about it. All right. Next one.
So Trish meets up with her friends Kim, Jackie, and Diane. She invites the new girl, Valerie, to the party. But Valerie declines the offer because she overheard them talking shit about her, and she was just like, I don't want to hang out with you guys, which is a reasonable...
Oh, it's a good... Yeah, you don't want to do that. No.
No.
But I really want to be cool, even though they hate me, but they'll like me if I do everything they want.
Honestly,
nope, she's smart.
I admire that, because I would have done the opposite of that.
Yeah, maybe they'll stop talking shit to just get to know me.
Yeah, no.
And you're like, oh, we know what you are, you piece of shit.
Yeah.
You're like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
After school, one of their classmates, Linda, goes back into the school to retrieve a book, but gets locked inside. Poor Linda, you dumb bitch. No! That never goes good. No. That never goes good.
No, also, that is the emptiest school, right?
Yes.
I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's like everybody was immediately out there. No kids smoking weed in the fucking thing.
No teachers lingering. Like, was this like the Friday before spring break? Right. Like, everyone was like gone.
I know skateboards existed around then. Come on. No punk motherfuckers just sitting there just like doing kickflips and shit.
No, sir.
Ugh. We could be describing just 2000s high school, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the 80s.
I don't know the
that
Yeah, I don't know the 80s that well either, but like.
In my imagination.
Yeah, right?
I don't know if skateboarding was as big of a thing. I'm just imagining a bunch of, like, new agey goth motherfuckers just standing there, like, smoking, like, a clove or something.
I know. This is history to us. It's weird. Sorry, older listeners, which there aren't a lot of you anyways. So.
It's like my dad who's listening, and he's just like, ah.
There were skateboards. They were square.
Back in my day. Sorry, Dad. Oh, quick shout out, though, for my dad, for real, though. He just got his master's degree.
What?
Yeah, my dad just got his master's degree.
Fuck yeah.
I'm very proud of him, so congratulations,
yes,
Dad.
Yes, way to go. Awesome. Yeah. All right.
So, yay. I just, you know, I wanted to.
Oh, congrats. That's impressive. That's awesome.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes.
I didn't get a master's degree. No dramatic pause there.
Oh, is my dissertation today? Oh, God damn it.
I did edit his thesis, so a tiny corner. A
partial responsibility.
A corner of it.
I get all the credit for this.
A corner of his master's is mine. So, once she enters the school and is promptly locked inside, she is attacked and presumably killed by Russ, the serial killer, armed with a power drill. And
yeah, this movie's weird because it has, like, some cutaways, and then it has, like, some graphic-ass kills.
Yeah,
it cuts, it's
like,
back and forth.
We're going to gouge your eyes out, but we can't show this poor woman getting murdered. Because I think it's because she's, like, chased around, and, like, it's, like, kind of a scary sequence.
It is. It's tense.
Yeah.
It definitely is pretty tense. You know she's, like, getting away.
Yeah.
Like, you know it's not happening, but you're like...
And she's trying so hard to live. Like, she's trying to be smart about it, but then for some reason, her really, really bloody arm wound is just, like, flowing under the door, and I'm like...
Yeah.
That's
pretty thick-ass blood.
Or it free-flowing. Like, yeah. I'm just like, that's not how blood works. Like, it's not like they just took, like, a pint and was just like...
That's how Roger Corman blood works.
Okay,
that's how
fair
Roger
enough.
Corman
yeah.
blood works.
Which,
right
you know,
there.
Per Roger Corman standards, blood and tits are both in this movie in... Great.
Like, oh, yeah. And throughout
the movie.
So as the party begins at night, the girls smoke good old Mary Jane and drink some booze while Valerie babysits her younger sister, Courtney, across the street. And I do like Valerie and her sister's dynamic because it feels like a sibling dynamic.
It does.
It like really feels like a sibling
yeah,
dynamic.
Yeah, this was written with like, they were like, ah, yes, I remember my sibling. Like, you know, sibling dynamics.
Oh, yeah, because I remember... Me and my brother I was in high school, him in middle school, and you can kind of, you can tell, there's like those couple years where there's a pretty big difference
in terms
of like where you guys are at.
Yeah.
Yeah, so totally relatable.
Where they're just like fighting and then 2 seconds later, it's just like, okay, we're cool.
I'm like, you'll get it. You're not a teenager yet. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, I don't spend enough attention with me. Like, God damn it. I'm a little asshole right now.
It's true.
Ugh.
And then also there's like... Like, this very silly scene where, like, the friends come over and it's just like, we have Maui, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, do you? Because, like, it looks like you have oregano in that bag because I know what weed looks like and that's not weed.
Roger Corman weed. No, but but I do like that it is teenagers genuinely acting like teenagers. Like, it's goofy,
true.
But it's also pretty on point. Like, it really is kind of on point.
There's, like, I think... When teenagers get up to, like, ridiculous bullshit when they're in high school, like, they go out, they hang out with their friends, they do silly stuff, they have a tendency to overact what they're doing.
Yeah, look how cool I am!
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like me and my friends would, like, go out for sushi a lot in high school. Like, it was, like, kind of, like, we'd do it a couple times a month where we would, like get dressed up and go out to sushi. Like, it was, like, a thing.
Even though
we were going out to dinner. Like, we were just... And it was just because, like, it was something we could do by ourselves.
Exactly, yeah. Sake bombs. We know you're not old enough for sake bombs.
Like, no, we know. You're clearly in high school. But yeah, so it's like that overacting where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you're so cool.
Everybody's putting their personality on display. Like that's exactly. Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, being in a group of friends is girls in high school.
Oh, as bros, it's a lot more chest puffy.
Definitely I'm sure. Is. I'm definitely sure. Is. It's a little bit more like. God, yeah. I was talking to my friends about this because I'm still friends with these people.
Same here. You know, fucking half of them on this goddamn show. So I'm you know the dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. High school.
Oy.
So, two boys from school, Jeff and Neil, shitheads,
okay.
arrive and spy on the girls while they change clothes.
This is a very Corman scene as well.
This scene, I'm just like, oh my god, we get it. And also, can I just say, they all change into very different pajamas. Like, someone's wearing, like, straight up, like, lingerie-type pajamas.
Yeah.
Some, like, one of them is straight up just in her clothes.
Right, just like a shirt and not even sweats.
Yeah, like, just like, like, jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone else is, like, wearing, like, glorified, oversized baseball attire?
Pajamas? Hard to say. I don't know.
Anyway, and they're just like, oh, this is the best day ever. Which also, like, one of the guys was, like, right behind one of the other dudes, and I was just like, clearly.
Oh, there's some vibes going on there, too. I gotta get a good view. I can feel your breath on my neck.
I can feel how much you're enjoying this. Like, stop it.
Oh, are you getting the same view I'm getting? Because you seem excited. Oh, boy. Okay, so Russ kills Mr. Constance outside with his power drill, all while everyone continues to drink and smoke completely unaware.
I thought Mr. Constance was going to be a more, like, established character, but he just, like, pops in. Yeah, he pops in and he's just like, sorry to scare you. Because, like, he does have, like, that moment where he, like, scares What's-Your-Face.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he's, like, in certain shots, he looks very young. In other ones, he looks like, he's, like, this weird ageless-looking motherfucker.
He is, huh?
And I'm like, okay, are you, like, this, like, hot neighbor that she has a thing for? Like, where is this going to go? And then he just gets immediately murked. And I'm like, oh, man.
Before you can really ask questions again, it's just like, okay, he's got a couple scenes ahead of him. Let's take him out now. They know him enough. They know him enough. Let's brutalize this motherfucker.
Enough to vaguely know who he is. Okay, so Diane asks Trish permission to go be with her boyfriend and goes to his car to find him decapitated and is murdered as well.
Yeah, this is when we say this is like a slasher, it's because of scenes like this.
It's so cheesy because, like, literally the boyfriend comes over and, like, they're just like, ooh, kissy kissy. Mm-hmm. And then she's just like, they're going to go sneak off and assumedly fuck. And Diane is just like, can we go get beer? Mm-hmm. Winky winky. And Trish is just like, you don't have to ask my permission.
Yeah.
You fucking weirdo. And then in the time it takes her to leave the car, go ask permission or whatever and go back, the boyfriend has been, like, throat cut, like, decapitated, straight, mm-hmm. and then
she's even marked.
Yeah, and then she's screaming and, like, honking from inside the garage, mind you. And they don't hear it?
Yeah.
But the girls across the street can.
Listen, not a lot of logic going on
There's
here.
Not a lot that makes sense.
Not a lot.
However, I still have questions. well, and... Yeah.
It's just, again, it's a Corman movie, but the girls order pizza and, while on the phone with their coach, Rachel, Jana...
That's the name of the coach.
Oh my god. Rachel, Jana, the girls answer the door and find the pizza delivery man with his eyes drilled out, which is hilarious. It's very hilarious.
Like, they open the door and his eyes are just gone, and they're like...
And there's, like, a sense before, it's like, well, what about the pizza guy? And then, like, fucking he just... Yeah, he just falls straight down, and it looks so.
And
do you know what though? For a parody of a slasher as originally written, this is when the parody elements come out. Like for sure,
it's very funny. There's another scene where I'm like, this is like Scary Movie before Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Let me make sure. Okay, yeah, it's not mentioned so in the thing, so I'm gonna mention it now. But there's a scene where Courtney, the sister, is like opening a fridge and like there's a body mm-hmm. that like comes out, and then she's like not looking in the fridge, so she closes it, and then she opens it again, and the body just like kind of like dangles out, and like it's very funny. Again, like this movie is shot very like evocatively, like it's very aesthetically pleasing.
It is so aesthetically pleasing. It's fucking weird. It looks so slick for how cheap it is. It's, yeah. I don't understand it.
I mean, yeah, great cinematography, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's also, like, what I like about this point in the movie is it's, like, the turning point of the movie. Because before this, it's just, like, we see people getting murdered, and we know that there's a murderer out there trying to kill them.
Yeah.
But the girls don't. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, no real imminent threat of danger.
It's like the Hitchcock bomb under the chair kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
The audience knows exactly where the threat is, but the characters don't, and there's a timer on this shit. So what your tension comes from waiting for them to... get the same information.
To figure it out.
Yeah.
And then once they open the door and, like, they see, like, this guy who just, like, topples over and his eyes are drilled out, then it's, like, they finally are, like, ah! And, like, they finally are, like, in this mortal peril.
I like how we did a Hitchcock comparison and they're like, oh, by the way, pizza guy with the eyes drilled out, it happens immediately afterwards.
Yeah. We cling to what we know. So the teens arm themselves with knives as Jeff and Neil run for help, but both boys are promptly killed.
I love how they make, like, a plan. They're like, listen, we just split up. One of us is going to survive, but it's going to be good. Like, it's so noble between them. They get a little bit of a gay vibe. A little bit. Because they're just, like, just short of saying, by the way, I love you and I've always loved you. Like, it's like, they're, like, a second away from being, like...
by the way.
Yeah, by the way, listen, before we die, can I just rub you a little bit? just a little bit.
Can we just make out?
I've always wanted to do it.
30 seconds.
And I think you'll like it, and I think we're both going to feel good about it at the end, but we really need to help these people, but I mean, it takes like a second. And then they both get killed stupidly. Like, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
so stupid. Russ gains entry to the house and murders Jackie. Trish and Kim barricade themselves in Trish's bedroom, but Russ enters through the window and kills Kim as Trish flees. It's just a haphazard death
parade. This is so fucking funny because, like, they're just like, we have to barricade ourselves in this room. And they do. And they're just like, okay, we're safe. And then he comes in through the window.
So easily. Like they're just like, oh, we didn't even think about this.
No thought went into this. Like, they haven't watched any horror movies ever. And then, of course, she gets, like, promptly murdered.
It's so good.
Oh, and it's so good because also, like, you get to see the killer, Russ, which is funny because he has a fucking name in this. It's not just, like, you know, it's not, I don't know.
He's like a dude, you know?
He's just
a guy.
He's just a dude.
His face doesn't really change tones. So
no.
That's what makes him scary, but, like...
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I have a question about this.
Oh, definitely.
But, yeah. So, Valerie and Courtney enter this house to find Kim dead. This is the chick who is in the fridge. And hide from Russ.
Oh, we're in peril now. Okay, instead of it leaving immediately, let's just
hide in the house in which there is the mortal peril.
Let's keep the plot going for sure. Coach Jana, having grown concerned over the phone call earlier, arrives and is confronted by Russ, who disembowels her with the drill very nastily.
Oh yeah, she has a fucked up death.
Mm-hmm. Enough where I was like, this movie, they give you some deaths and they cut away on other deaths.
Uh-huh.
So in my mind, I was like, oh, are they gonna show? And they give you like, oh, we're gonna cut away, but then they like, no, we're not cutting. And it's just like,
flush. I mean, but to be fair, it's not like we're getting, like, entrails.
Yeah, that's true. It could have been worse.
So this is a very bloody movie, but it's not gory.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a very, like...
It's like a gushy movie.
It's a gushy movie.
It's very gushy. A lot of stuff gushing out. Yeah.
Wonderful. Valerie chases Russ with a machete, eventually severing his hand before slicing his stomach open. He then falls into the pool, and there's like a brilliant little plume of blood. Mm-hmm. This is the pool that was ruined in the reshoot.
Yeah, it was. And then again, as this happened too, the machete took out the penis drill.
Yes. Yes. She finds a machete that is just like mounted on a wall in a garage, and I'm just like, where was this the whole time? Whatever. She takes the machete and like chops off his drill dick.
Drill dick. But like also, there's like a bit of a hesitancy. Like she isn't quite like it's a weird like awkward. Like you know she hasn't really used it.
No, she's just like,
But then the rage happens. And yeah. It's just since he's fucking
dead. Very weird.
Once she does the drill, then it's like, oh, now you're fucking dead, bitch. Because I know what this does. And yeah. He's like, like he just
my dick.
Yeah. Oh, and he has a dialogue scene before this.
Yes.
You hear him talk for the first
time. And it's like too little too late.
But it's like, you read an incel's comment on the internet.
It's true. It's just like, I love you. I kill because I love you.
Why don't women just love me because I love them? I should have any women I want that I love, right? That's just how it works because I'm also a man and I get what I... Like, he's like that incel piece of shit.
Absolutely.
Just beta fucking voice. It yes. is hilarious, which makes it a lot more satisfying because he gets murked pretty bad.
His death is pretty... Like, his hand gets chopped off, which, by the way, is not one clean cut. He just lets this chick, like, hack away at his good
hand.
He's
like, oh, I'm not going to move my hand at all. You just keep going.
It's just like, just take it off.
It's just hanging right now, so just one more. There you go. Okay, now I'm going to scream! So Rusty merges and attacks them once more. Valerie finally kills him with the machete. Valerie and Trish break down in tears as Courtney looks on in shock because her sister just murked the fuck out of somebody.
It's true.
Yeah.
What a movie. So that's the movie. Normally,
it's so simple and it's a clean watch. It's fast.
It's a fast watch. I did. I had to pause it in the middle, run to the pharmacy, and run back because they were going to close at 9, and I watched this at 8:30, and I was like, oh, fuck, and I had to, like, run really quick. But it was, it was still, like, the fastest watch ever.
Seriously.
It's a fast watch.
It's, like, easy. Like, I could watch it again. Yeah. And, like, it would be, like, nothing. It'd be one Lord of the Rings movie. Like, that's it.
It's true. Yeah. One Lord of the Rings movie.
But hey, there you go. That's Slim Freud Massacre for you. You know, go 1982.
Normally, we're just like, oh, you should watch this movie. Or, oh, spoiler alert, this is from 1982.
Yeah.
Sure, we both haven't seen it yet, or seen it before this episode, but you're not missing.
It's basic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the allure of this movie comes from the cult, like, acclaim that it receives.
I can see why there's acclaim. I can definitely see why there's a claim. I mean, honestly, there's a lot going for it. But, I mean, it's also pretty niche. It's you have to be a slasher fan to get the most out of this movie. Like,
yes.
The most out of this movie.
Yes. If you ask someone what their least favorite subgenre is in horror and they say slasher, then, like, don't recommend this
Not
movie.
Not at all. No.
But if on the flip side, if someone does say, like, slasher, like, as a subgenre is, like, one of their favorites, then, like, yes, they will get a huge kick out of this movie. Because I got a huge kick out of this movie.
I did, too. I quite enjoyed it. But that's your sentence has to be like, oh, well, you got to watch this movie then.
Yeah.
If you like slashers, you got to watch this movie. If you have issues, any kind of issues with slashers, they will be at the forefront of this viewing because it is Slasher 101. Like,
it is.
Really 101. It is intro to Slasher. But, you know, a lot of slashers can be cheap, they can be schlocky, they can be all these things. This is that. But it's a very refined version of that, which is weird. Because
it's refined in very weird ways.
Yes, yeah, in ways you don't expect from the era.
The way it's shot, it's clean.
Yeah, this is the... Okay, so we covered the St. Valentine... Oh, no, was it? Valentine's Day, right?
No.
No, which one was it?
Oh, but My Bloody Valentine?
My Bloody Valentine, 1982, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if that movie actually had good cinematography. Because that movie looked cheap and shitty and, like, weird.
And the plot... I mean, but it also had, like, the slowest plot ever. But also, but if it had, like, interesting... If it had, like, slightly more interesting dialogue and was shot in, like, a very interesting and more interesting manner, yeah.
Yeah, it would have carried a lot of the same elements as this. Imagine, like, a super polished version of that movie. And you get Slumber Party Massacre, surprisingly. Like, it has all those elements and it does them pretty well.
Yes. Okay, so we're going into discussions. We're going to talk about the movie. But one of the things that I did love about this movie is that you can see... In, like, its, like, skeletal structure, that this was initially built to be a parody.
Yeah. Especially in the last third act.
Yes.
Third act is pretty much parody.
It's chaos. Yeah. But I love that. Like, I love that feel. And I think this is just me slowly recovering the comedy fan within me.
Yeah, there you go. Because there's a lot of comedic elements.
It's a very funny movie. Like, it is...
the dialogue delivery. Like, right down to the way characters, like, whinily say their intentions.
Yeah.
Like, you get it.
It's, like, and what sucks is, like, I would never suggest this for someone's first slasher movie.
No, like you need to be seasoned.
You have to know the rules. You have to know what slasher, like the slasher subgenre has to offer before you watch this. Like, it's like a Cabin in the Woods type scenario. You have to know the rules before you play the game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. To get maximum enjoyment, at least, yeah.
Right. You could watch this and think, like, everything was being said seriously, or take everything that was being said at face value, which you shouldn't, because a lot of this was, I believe, parody.
I think so too. Yeah, like most elements of it. Really.
Yeah,
but they shoot it, and the characters do it as if they're real, like they're just committed to it, which I think elevates the film a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, sure, initial like thoughts is a great question to start off with, but I am curious: would you consider this a comedy horror film or horror comedy?
I wouldn't say, only because it doesn't seem intentional. I mean, it is intentional, it's comedy, but, like, not outwardly so.
Not as, like, it's not your Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
No, definitely
it's
not
your Cabin in the Woods.
No,
fair enough.
It clearly tries to abide by Corman's rules of let's make it a serious, more, like, grounded slasher.
Yeah.
But it does it in a way that winks more.
It's a little nudgy, a little winky.
It winks, it lets you know, hey, I know you know the rules, I know the rules, let's just exploit this shit.
I think if we had gotten, like, what Rita Mae Brown had initially written and what Amy Holden Jones had, like, initially envisioned,
I
think it would have been a little different.
No, definitely. I think it
would have been a little bit more of the horror, the comedy horror type.
It would have been ahead of its time. It absolutely would have been ahead of its time.
Like more like Scream-ish.
Definitely. That's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Clearly. And again, you see kind of Scream elements towards the back part of it. down to goofiness and tropes.
I would say this is closer to Scream 3 than it is to Scream 1.
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean? Like, for anyone who's listening who, like, you know, has watched the Scream movies and, like, knows, like, the Scream franchise is my favorite horror, like,
so
franchise.
Great. Yeah.
But Scream 3 is ridiculous. Like, it is silly.
Yeah.
And where
Scream 1 is silly, but also terrifying.
It's refined in a little bit. It takes itself a little bit more seriously because it's establishing itself. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to Scream 3, they're just like, oh, how can we fuck with this?
And that, how can we fuck with this is Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
and they both have that essence about them, and I fucking love it.
They don't give a shit.
No. And that kind of goes into my thoughts. I like this movie way more than I thought I was going to. I thought I was going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought I was going to, like, walk into this recording and just be like, ah, fuck.
We're going to get through another one of these fucking things? Yeah.
Well, yeah. But that was my initial concern. And I was just like, oh, no. Because, like, I picked this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And very rarely do we pick movies that neither of us have seen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Usually it's,
it's like
introducing the mood to each other.
Right. Or it's like a suggestion of, like, oh, you should watch this. And that's, I feel like that's slightly less nerve-wracking than, like, we both haven't seen this. But I still feel responsible for it because
no,
I picked
blind.
It.
Yeah. No. Honestly, a good way to go. Because I also enjoyed this movie more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And I think it being the length that it is, and we've already talked at length about what works with the movie.
Yeah.
The fact that you get that package in like 82 minutes.
Yeah.
That's insane. And you get a lot for your 82 minutes. You really do.
This is an incredibly fast-paced film. Like, it does not feel like 82. It does feel like a very, very, like, it feels like an hour-long movie. Like, it is quick.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel rushed. No, everything's pretty intentional, which I think is what a lot of movies that have a short runtime, it often feels like they're stretching the story because they only had like half an hour story. This clearly has its whole 82 plotted out. Like, a noted editor who was about to edit E.T. directed this film. She knows how to pace a fucking movie.
Yeah, totally. And that's what I like is, like, it has this build-up, and then for the third act, like, it's just like, okay, we're gonna go.
Balls to the wall, that's good.
Balls to the wall. And then by the end, then it wraps everything up in a decent enough bow that it's like, okay, we're done. And, the pacing is actually, surprisingly, the pacing in this movie is phenomenal.
Yeah, and it delivers the goods that you wait for in the way it constructs its scenes for the most part. Again, a lot of off-screen deaths, it's true. But the ones you get are good, and the killer gets killed he gets destroyed.
Yes, I also want to point out, the killer gets a tremendous amount of screen time.
Oh, and he's not masked.
No.
He's not doing any, he is a dude. He's a regular dude that looks like a regular dude.
Yeah, so I do want to, I actually want to bring this up because I wrote this as a question. So the killer in this movie is unmasked and very human, something that people aren't quite used to seeing at this point in the 80s. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this because we get like lingering, like views of his face, him being just a fucking person. And for a slasher movie, like, it felt very out of the norm to me.
Well, like, to me, a lot of slashers that have masks, they're aiming for iconography. They're aiming for, to get a place with some of the big dogs who established that rule already. This, it goes the other approach. You can go that approach, or you can go killing instruments. The distinguishing factor for him is the drill. It's the killing instrument. That's what makes him different. But because of that, you don't have to be concerned about the mask or the aesthetic.
Right.
Which,
then you have, like...
Then you have creepy... They knew what... Okay, this is made by a woman director here. She knows what a creep looks like. She 100% knows, like, oh...
She knows what a sweaty truck stop-looking creepazoid,
like, oh, she's seen somebody that's on her same bus route in college that would sit in the same fucking spot and stare at her the entire route. She knows that look, right?
I know that look.
The gaze from this fucking guy is that look.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is actually spot on.
Thank you.
Anyone who's listening, if you've ever had, like, on public transportation, I know some people haven't, but, like, if you had to take public transportation in high school and you had to, like, be, like, across from some creepazoid guy.
It's the same fucking route you do the same time because they're going to go work at fucking the shoe store or wherever they go to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I went to high school in downtown San Diego, buddy. every day. Like, it was always something.
And this guy, again, you can tell... It's a female director based purely on his gaze.
Oh, absolutely.
Purely on the way she frames him. How she gives you the obsessed version lingering of his fucking face. And he kills them.
Yeah.
So it makes him more menacing until, of course, he gets castrated at the fucking end.
He does.
He just gets...
Yeah, he gets a shit wrecked.
Bad. And by the people he's terrorizing, which is awesome.
I mean, yeah, it's true.
You need to see his face for that kind of retribution. You need to see the killer's face. And you know, the mask, you'd have to have a little reveal. It'd be some guy you never got used to, so you have no impact on that.
And I think this is a good setup for when we do eventually go to what we're going into later in the month, because it's a good combination of column A and column B.
Yeah.
Iconography and iconic weapon.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. What a lot of people aim for in this genre, especially in the 80s.
I mean, yeah.
But I mean...
Considering who did it.
But what do you think about the killer in this one?
He's a type of creepy that I couldn't quite put my finger on until you used the public transportation analogy, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty accurate. Or, like, being stuck on, like, a train or a plane or a bus or, like, any kind of thing where it's just, like, there's just some guy who's just staring at you and it's just, like...
At you. You know, not staring at nobody else.
It's public transportation, like, is what made me a bitch. I get
cold real fast.
What made me, like, not be afraid to, like, one, be loud and two, just be like, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah.
Because, like, the louder and more aggressive you are, people are just like, oh, shit, and then they stop.
And because also, if you don't do that,
They're going
to keep doing it, absolutely. And he's that, again, the way he's like, and you're so beautiful and we've been together, like, that... Incel.
The incel vibes in this also very creepy, but it was particularly like the first line he says in this movie is like, I love you. Like, it's so like light and like fluty. Like, it's weird.
It's like, despite me killing all your friends, you're cool with me, right? Because I want to be with you forever. Like, that weird.
He only has like a little bit of dialogue, but the little bit of dialogue he has, like, I'm still thinking about it.
It's creepy.
I don't know if it was like, it felt kind of off. And I don't know if it was, like, I needed more or I just needed him to be completely silent, like, you know, Michael Myers or something. I don't know.
No, I think it feels off with a purpose. Like, it seems
like
entirely
purposely
intentional.
Dissettling?
Yeah, exactly. You're not supposed to be certain about where he really stands. You're not. I mean, that's what makes him creepy. He can go from being like, this is just pathetic little, and then fucking kills the shit out of people.
I think, and I don't know, like... I don't know if this is just, like, the true crime fan in me, but a guy goes to prison for murder. He kills 6 people. He escapes. And his first thought is, I'm just going to go out and try to kill as many more people as I can in the neighborhood in which mm-hmm. I just escaped from.
Yeah.
But the logic doesn't track, but that's fine.
Yeah.
They needed a plot device and they took it. But I think, and this is what I honestly did kind of love, is they took the escaped convicts mm-hmm. trope, like of like the urban legend of like the hook man.
Yeah.
Like they took those kinds of urban legend essences and put it into this movie. And no one's paying attention.
Yeah.
Like we hear it on the radio and everyone's just going on with their life. We see it in the newspaper and like no one's paying attention. Like no, mm-hmm. like if, yeah. And people are just going on with their merry lives. And
I mean, it's Venice. It's Venice in the 80s.
Yeah. What prison is near Venice?
I don't know. But if it's Venice in the 80s, they were used to crime happening pretty frequently.
I mean, sure. So, but yeah. Is it... Anyway. Ugh. I'm poking holes in ways that I don't need to be.
Yeah. Honestly, like, there doesn't need... I don't think there... The way they portray the killer, logic is not his forte.
No,
it's clearly not his forte.
No, it's not.
Which makes him crazier because again, it becomes unpredictable.
Uh-huh.
It's scary, very very scary.
I am curious on your thoughts. Do you interpret this as a feminist film? Why or why not?
For my limited limited understanding of what feminist films really are.
Well, okay, Born in Flames is not necessarily the epitome of feminist film. Just take that into it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I'm not... Again, that's a bad feminist film. But it's fucking hard for me to say because I kind of don't. I kind of feel like it's a Roger Corman film first.
Okay.
Knowing the production and knowing who the creative team behind it, there are clearly feminist elements that I overlooked before looking into it afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. So to me, it was like, this is actually surprisingly slick slasher. But I remember I saw a female director, so I was like, okay.
For context, like a lot of people consider like Black Christmas a feminist film.
I don't know if we talked about it then.
We have.
I don't know if we brought the feminist film portion of it in the episode, but I can kind of see that too. I don't really know.
Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body is so a feminist film, though.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
That's like a very feminist
You're like,
film.
With my limited understanding of feminist film, I mm-hmm. do know that Jennifer's Body is a mm-hmm. feminist film.
You know, I actually would probably say yes. Now that I really think about it, just because of the level of agency a lot of these women have throughout the movie.
Interesting.
That is something that for 1982... very absent for this genre in particular, and honestly like a lot of films at the time itself, like you don't really have too many strong female characters. You're like 8 years away from Silence of the Lambs, where fucking Jodie Foster's being like the goddamn hero and shit like that. So
funnily enough, Slumber Party Massacre is on the list of, if you Google feminist horror films,
it makes sense.
Slumber Party Massacre is on there.
So I would say yes, with an asterisk of, while it was intended to do so, it did its best to not be that.
Yeah.
But the elements are clearly there.
I agree with what you're saying, especially regarding what's-his-face, the producer.
Roger Corman.
Yeah, Roger Corman. I feel like his influence definitely kind of overpowered any kind of feminist, like, mm-hmm. the core of, like, the feminist... message.
It stopped it from being a scream.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the shots in which we do see, like, which there are a ton of, like, naked teenagers in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, a ton.
There's a lot.
It's not done in, like, a way that feels super male-gazy.
No. Yeah.
Which I did actually have a cognizant thought of before I knew this was directed by a woman.
Okay, that's
so good. I was like this, like as I was watching it, I was just like, okay, like there's definitely a lot of like nudity in this movie, but mm-hmm. it doesn't feel as exploitative as it could have been.
Well,
which is weird because there's like some close up shots of like asses and stuff, and I was like, all right, whatever.
It very slickly does something that I would say the Friday the 13th movies try to do, which is just people hanging out.
Yes.
It does just people hanging out way, way better than a lot of movies in bigger franchises.
And I think that's why I love the Friday the 13th franchises so much.
Yeah.
Or movies, not franchises. It's mm-hmm. just the franchise. But why I enjoy the franchise so much is because there is, like, it has, like, I interpret a lot of it as humor, even though I know it was not written to be humor. Mm-hmm. I know it was written to be dead serious. But
when you cast Crispin Glover, what do you do?
And when he's dancing like that, and you know, like, what is there else to
and
do?
And you got a Feldman in there?
Yeah, what else is there to do but laugh?
Yeah.
No, but, yeah, that's why I love Friday the 13th so much, for that reason, is even though it's not meant to necessarily be comedic, I personally think they're very funny films.
Yeah, exactly, and again, like, it does... This one does a surprisingly good job of using those elements, but making them feel a little more genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think providing genuine interactions for female characters that ultimately overpower the dick drill is a good sign of a feminist film, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, maybe a little.
I do, yeah. I'm going back and forth on this because it's like, it's no Ginger Snaps. It's no Jennifer's Body.
No, yeah.
You know?
They don't have that much agency. They're still 1982.
I mean, yes, but okay, so to be more fair, I mean, it's no Black Christmas, which even then had only, like, you know, so.
That's true. It definitely doesn't have the same kind of because Black Christmas you have the girls like, oh, I'm gonna get an abortion's gonna happen and like all these things.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
to be fair, in this movie, like even some of the girls who are drinking, who are having sex, who are, you know, being bad, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
Make it. They survive, mm-hmm. which is good. However, that does bring me to my next question. About Valerie.
Mm-hmm.
Valerie is set up in like perfect like posture to be the final girl in this movie.
Yeah.
I would make an argument, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, but even though three women or teenagers survive this movie,
mm-hmm.
I would argue that Valerie is the final girl.
I think so too. No, she's the one given the most screen time.
She's also the most like quote unquote virginal. She's also the one whose like name is shortened to Val. Like, you know, she has like that like masculine ish name.
Well, she has relationships with the survivors too.
Mm-hmm.
So she's right in the middle for both of them. Both of the other survivors would not have any kind of connection except Val.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, she's the mutual contact.
She's the glue. Yeah,
exactly.
She's definitely the glue. She's obviously the final girl, but. It is refreshing to see other characters survive that aren't just, like, her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Or the guy that likes her. It's like, oh, now we can kiss finally. Like,
all that now bullshit. Now we can kiss finally. That's
all
true.
All the bullshit, right?
That's very true. I do agree with that.
It excises that. And, again, it allows her to, I don't actually have some agency compared to other characters that just don't. That get fucking gutted and shit. You know?
Yeah. Totally.
I mean, she's a final girl. I would definitely say she is.
I agree. Okay. Mm-hmm. Glad we're all in consensus on that.
Yeah, no, we've been doing this a long time.
Okay, so I did want to at least make some space, because we have been singing its praises for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
While the movie is a cult classic, feel free to point out some of the more ridiculous shortcomings of this movie, if you would like. If there's anything in particular you wanted to be like, what the fuck was this?
I mean, I don't even know what to say, like, really. Like, it's not like a slick movie. You're going to find ridiculousness in just about every frame, you know? The dude characters in particular
are, like, silly. Like, they're comical.
They're, like, fucking...
To be fair, that is what most female characters are like in most slasher movies.
Yeah,
like...
that makes sense. They're caricatures.
Exactly.
Yeah, and these dudes are 100%
The two
bad.
Dudes, I'm just like, oh my god, like... Mm-hmm. Like, all they're focused on is, like, seeing chicks and getting laid and, like, you know.
Yeah. And they're still interacting with them, too, and it's fucking weird.
It's very weird. And then they get invited in for strawberry daiquiris. Like, what? And then, okay, that does remind me of a very funny moment. Like, mm-hmm. they are making strawberry daiquiris.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, what high schooler, like, I tried making daiquiris, like, when I was in high school and I failed miserably. Like, just drink whatever stupid, like... gut rot you can find when you're in high school.
That you can't buy legally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the point is they're making strawberry daiquiris. And the second they turn on the blender, what's her face is getting murdered in the garage. And it is so fucking funny.
Okay, so I'm gonna spoiler alert my kill of the film here, but
in terms
of the ridiculousness.
I mean, we're about to go into it, so please.
I really love, again, these dudes are weird, right? But the way they both get taken out to me is fucking brilliant, because I love the, was it Val watching a horror movie? And she's just like, has it all loud and is already...
She's like ignoring.
Yeah, she's like, all frustrated. She's like, no, I'm here to watch a movie or whatever. And the fucking guy's getting killed right outside, like, amazingly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's been done. This definitely screamed at a callback to this, clearly. But I like that weirdness. Like, the movie knows, like, oh, you're going to get the damsel death. You're getting the damsel death.
He gets the damsel death. I love that.
He does.
Yeah.
He absolutely does.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I love that. Totally.
And to me, like, that's a good summation of what this movie really, really is.
Yeah.
Which, it is goofy. It's goofy, ridiculous. Scenarios don't really line up, but done it so entertainingly.
Like, this... You could, like, strain pasta with how many holes are in this plot. Like, it is bad.
Yeah.
It is. But, you know, kind of skipping ahead, my kill of the film.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? Trish? I don't know. The boyfriend, girlfriend in the garage. That was just very satisfying to me. Like, it was funny.
Wait, which one?
With the daiquiri death.
Which one was that?
She turns on the blender to the daiquiri, just, like, getting murdered.
Mm-hmm. But, like, little things like that.
Also, even though we don't really see his death, the pizza boy. Like, pizza boy. That is just, good.
That's when, like, it clearly turns, like, oh, we're gonna be funny now. Yes. You better laugh at this shit, because if not, you're gonna have a bad time going forward.
Like, I can just imagine seeing this in theaters and just, like...
Oh, it'd be great.
It would be so fun.
It would be so fun. I agree. It'd be a very, very fun movie to
dissect. The pizza boy or the couple... Like, those two were both very choice deaths, in my opinion.
I agree. And it leans into his ridiculousness, which is why it's hard for me to, like, really pinpoint. Mm-hmm. Because everything in this movie is ridiculous. It really is.
Yes, absolutely.
There's no point where you're, like, seriously concerned about any character. They're going through the motions in the most entertaining way possible.
It's unfortunate, but you know that they're fodder.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, like, who's gonna live? Who's, but most of you are gonna die. Like, watching this movie as a slasher fan, and you know all the rules, like, going into it, like, you know it, like, most of them are gonna die.
Yeah.
And that just adds, I think that adds a lot to it, watching it in retrospect, as opposed to if I was in 1982 and going to see it and never having really watched a lot of slasher movies.
Yeah.
I can see how it might be confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? I don't know.
I guess, but I feel like what elements are there still will breed some entertainment.
Agreed. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
no,
definitely.
But
you're going to get a lot more if you know those rules.
Exactly.
You get a lot
if
more.
You're like a little horror nerd like us, like, you're totally going to get more out of it.
You're like, way more. It's big difference.
Totally. All right. Let's wrap this up. Rate this movie out of 5 drilled dick innuendos.
That many innuendos?
Yeah. I mean, there's way more than 5 in the movie, to be certain, but...
3.5 for me. 3.5 dick innuendos.
God damn it, Anthony.
I can't... I don't know how it'd be better, but it is what it is.
No, I was gonna... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's yours?
I was gonna give it a 3. Like, I had it in my head. Like, you always consistently rate higher than
me. Yeah, always a little bit higher, but yeah, to me, this is a 3.5, only because I know the behind the scenes. I'm a horror fan, and if you have both of those elements going into it, you'll like it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, so... Or actually, I didn't know about the... women director so much, but once I saw directed by it, I'm like, oh, she's, this is gonna be a little different. Like, you can kind of tell.
Yeah, the view is gonna be a little different.
And it's also, you know, it has such ace level cinematography. I'm like down with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna give it a little higher
than
normal.
It is very aesthetically, like, shot.
Mm-hmm. If 2.5 is the middle between our 5 stars, I'm gonna give it 1 point higher. Give it a 3.5. To me, this is right in that realm.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I'm giving it a 3 for all the reasons you said.
Mm-hmm.
I think only just because it isn't a universal watch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I think that I'm dinging it for that. But I like, which isn't to say, like, my ratings are not totally arbitrary, but, like, I do really enjoy this movie. Like, I would watch it if I was, like, with, like, a bunch of friends and we were just, like, a good, like, you know... just wanting to have a good time. You mm-hmm. don't necessarily have to pay a ton of attention.
No, this is a boozy movie.
This is the same experience as the characters. A boozy movie. This is a makeout movie. This is all of it.
This is a make daiquiris and eat pizza movie.
Yes, it is.
One of those fucking movies.
Absolutely. And then you can be like, oh, hey, at least we're not eating pizza off of a corpse.
And then your fucking bro friends walk, church!
Yeah.
It's all there. Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Do you have any other closing thoughts? Would you recommend this movie?
Again, back to, if you're a horror fan, watch it. Yeah. This is actually really good for horror fans. If you're not a horror fan, I look at some of the context of it and then maybe think about it. But it really is going to be slasher, like,
AF. Yeah. If you love slasher movies, just like as like a subgenre, mm-hmm. highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. And horror in general, like, I would also recommend it. But specifically for like the slasher fans, definitely recommend.
However, if like a drill death is something that maybe will make you wince, it gets pretty graphic at times. So, yeah.
It's graphic.
Yeah, graphic enough.
It's 80s graphic.
There you go. 80s graphic.
80s level graphic. All right. That
next
was.
Week? Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Slumber Party Massacre from 1982. Next week.
Next week is a return of a type of episode that we haven't done in a long time.
How long has it been?
I can't even pinpoint back to
how long. I need to check.
It could have been last season. It could have been earlier this year.
It had to have been last year.
But we're bringing back the Remake versus OG,
woo-hoo!
Covering two movies next week, both with the same title, same premise, possibly same distributors, but they are, one's a remake, one's the original, and we're gonna talk about both these motherfuckers.
The last time we did a remake versus OG
was
July of last year.
Oh boy.
July almost, of 2020, so it's almost been a full year.
Almost been a full year. We are sorry for depriving you of
it
this
has, it, so a long time coming. I'm very excited to cover this because I've only seen one of them.
I've only seen one of them too.
We've seen the opposite ones.
Yeah, you know we have because I've not seen the newer one.
I've only seen the newer one, and I was sophomore in high school when I saw it, and was on a bus going to LA for like my college trip, and like, so I wasn't paying any attention. I was listening to Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, like staring out the window wistfully.
See, and I always talk about my, you know, we had Bootleg Satellite, and I watch IFC all the time. One of those fucking ones. One of those ones that came on after the documentaries and shit.
Okay, so we have OG versus remake next week. Mm-hmm. After that, we have a foreign film.
Which will be very interesting. I have no idea what that shit's about.
I've seen it, I'm going to have to defend it. But it's fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you might like it.
I probably will. We'll see. We've been aligning a lot recently.
And then, of course, the franchise that was mentioned, that'll cap off high school horror month.
One of the big dogs. One of the big dogs. Yeah. Top three dogs.
And then, as you all know, next month.
Yeah, next month.
It's coming up. But, you know, we'll talk about that later.
As we get closer.
As
we get closer.
But yeah, so that's, thank you everyone for listening this week. We hope you will enjoy just us this month as we do not have any guests, but that's fine. It'll be a good time. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribing wherever you are listening. It does help other people find the podcast and just it helps support us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that we're finishing up season 3 soon is just a freaking dream come true. This is crazy.
That's insane.
And you guys are just, all the love and comments and support is just, you guys, it warms my heart. You guys are the best. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And then if you want to find Anthony, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Yeah.
And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. So it's a good time. I'm on Twitter way more often than Anthony is.
That's true. That's true. You'll get popping into some interesting stuff.
My screen time is like just like you live on your phone, huh? And I'm like I'm on Instagram and Twitter constantly. So.
And I have the occasional story splurge, so look out for some polls stuff right there.
It's true. Anthony just likes posting when he's at cool bars, and he's just like, look at how cool I am.
Or I'll ask a question and be like, what weird imagery can I put behind their responses?
It's true. And then all of your friends are just like giving you the most like funny responses. Yeah.
All the college friends and all the bros.
All your like I can. It's funny because like most of your responses I can pinpoint which bros.
You can tell
which bro said what. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, Anthony was recently. I know we didn't mention it last week, but you were You were on N4L.
Mm-hmm. N4L gaming podcast. Yeah. I talked about Pokemon again. I'm a giant nerd. I love Pokemon.
Yes.
And a lot of Resident Evil, too. So.
When I was recovering from my second COVID dose, I fell asleep listening to you guys talk. And it was like just listening to friends chat in a room while I dozed.
Talking shit. It was great.
It was fun. Wonderful. No, it was really fun. Yeah. It was fun to listen to. They're all great over there. So go check them out also.
Check out N4L. And you're definitely going to hear them again on this podcast.
I mean, they're here all the time. All the time. You know, mm-hmm. So. And I think that's it for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And until then... If there's a serial killer on the loose, don't invite all of your high school friends over for a weirdly naked sleepover.
Yeah, and be careful where you point your dirty drill dick, dude. Yeah, watch out.
Bye, guys.